Mike Sklens. This week, I have three guests with me. First is Previews editor Carl Castaneda.
Hey there, ho there, everyone.
And then I have Dan Bloodworth, senior editor.
Hey.
And also joining us this week is
Hi, everyone.
Podcaster extraordinaire Chris Kohler from Wired's Game Life. So I just want to start real quick with what everyone's been playing this week. I'll just go around the table and start with Dan.
I'm actually playing Lunar Knights, which I just got a review copy in finally on Monday. I've actually been liking it quite a bit.
That's the
Boktai.
The Boktai game, right?
Yeah, and you can actually stick Boktai into the Game Boy Advance slot, and it uses it as a solar sensor to boost the in-game sunlight. So you just kind of go outside, and it adds a couple more blocks to your meter.
It doesn't play just like Boktai?
It's pretty similar, only now there's two characters. There's your normal boy with a solar gun, and then there's another character who's like he's like a dark vampire hunter, and he has like swords and skies and stuff.
Hmm. What about you, Carl?
Well, I know that you've been playing a lot of Blur, so I'll let you do that discussion a little later. But yeah. I've actually been playing a ton of Virtual Console. Besides the write-up for Sword of Vermillion that I did earlier this week, I also bought Street Fighter 2 and another game that I can't remember. I always confuse
Streets of Rage.
Yeah, I always confuse earlier. That with Final Fight. I don't know why. But so Sword of Vermillion is crap. You know, don't buy it. And Street Fighter 2, you know, it's a little slow. It's slower than I remember.
It would have been nice if they put Street Fighter 2 Turbo up.
Maybe, yeah. But yeah,
the original was
it's
slower.
It's still good for multiplayer, but it's just a little. I can't really get into it because it's just a little too slow. And as for that last one, I'm still thinking it's Final Fight. Yeah, it's just a little. I kind of regret buying it. I mean, it's very beat 'em up, generic. I don't know. Mike, didn't you say I should wait for the sequel?
Yeah, Streets of Rage 2 is a lot better.
So, yeah. But other than that, I've just been playing a little Blur. But I know you've been playing that too, so
yeah.
I'll explain it.
Yeah.
I haven't been playing anything this week because of Game Developers Conference. So, I don't know whether... I have two possible answers here. One is that I've been reading The Watchmen for the first time, which... is an excellent book, yeah. And
I
saw my friend buying the huge, you know, $75, you could kill a man with it, you know, giant boxed version. And I was like, you know what, if he's spending that much on a huge copy of something he already has, I should really check it out. And I don't read a lot of, I know this is kind of weird, but I don't really read a lot of graphic novels, but it was super cool, and I sort of read it on the bus back and forth to GDC every day. The second answer that I have is that last week I was finishing up Professor Layton for the DS, and I don't know if any of you guys actually played this, but it's pretty goddamn awesome. Professor Layton in the Mysterious Town, the Left Level 5's first their first self-published game that just came out for DS, and is doing actually pretty well. I think they're getting near like 200,000 copies.
Okay.
I'm sure you've heard a lot about it, but it's logic puzzles. Built around a really a small but really funny and interesting story with animation that kind of looks like Triplets of Belleville. But the idea is that it's just there's not a lot of, unlike Hotel Dusk, where it's like 2 hours of story and then a really easy puzzle. It's like difficult puzzle, difficult puzzle, difficult puzzle, and then a little bit of story. And so it really keeps your brain engaged. You've got to think a lot to because it's all like lateral thinking puzzles. There's some that require a little bit of, you know, a little bit of math, but it's mostly just entirely, you know, lateral thinking and trying to logic puzzles. I mean, if you've ever, you know, been a kid, everybody gets books of logic puzzles or whatever and can sit and figure them out, and kind of like, you know, the one with getting the chicken and the fox and the bag of cabbage, you know, across a river, but the fox will eat the chicken and the chicken will eat the cabbage, right? That kind of thing. And so and it's really, really cool. And I played it to completion, love it. Unfortunately, you need to be, you really need to be able to read Japanese I wouldn't say a native level, but enough, you know, definitely past like Japanese 101 level if you want to have any hope of actually even playing this game past like the first puzzle. which is why I'm hoping that they'll that somebody will pick it up and translate it into English. But it was an excellent game, really great debut for Level 5 as far as self-publishing, and they're making a sequel, which I'm really excited about. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, and nice. Kind of speaking of them, the other thing I've been playing before I got into Lunar Knights is actually Dragon Quest VIII. So I just I just got into that because I just got a PlayStation 2 for Christmas.
A little late on that train.
Late to the party.
As for me, like Carl said, I've been playing a lot of SSX Blur. I couldn't make the podcast last week, so I would have given my thoughts on it then, but the review just went up last night as of this recording, which was Saturday night, and I really like it. It takes a while to get used to the controls, but once you've got them like down, the game is just a lot of fun. It's got a good level of challenge and good levels and lots of different things to do. I think it's really good.
My biggest complaint about that game is the slalom or the slalom or however the hell you pronounce it.
Slalom. Yeah, there slalom you go. It's a pain in the ass. And I've gotten to the point where I can do the slalom on the first slalom level on Wild Tree Fun. I can do that really easily. Like, I can just do it quickly, just go right down the mountain.
Yeah.
But as soon as I get up to the next one on Proud Powder, I completely suck.
It should never be a difficult game.
It would probably be better without, and it's just extremely difficult. And then we also have I think the motion controls are really good for
for slalom. I mean, it's just that, you know, tilting the nunchuck, it just doesn't work. You can't make really precise movements.
Well, you have to be going really wide. Like, the whole idea of slalom is that you're making these really, really wide sweeping turns and not snaking yourself right through the gates.
Like, the only way that I was really able to complete most of them is that there's a glitch in the game that if you press minus, it reorients you to the middle. And then you're able to do slaloms really easy, but, like, I shouldn't have to do that in a game.
Well, I can get right, like I said before, I can get right through the Wild Tree Fun slalom course, but what you're probably doing is you're probably trying to snake really close in between all of them, and what you have to do is go really wide and take these really wide sweeping turns. There's videos on YouTube of people doing it, and if you see that, it'll click and make a lot more sense, but it's still pretty difficult. And then there's also, we have last week's Virtual Console games. Carl, you said you're playing Sword of Vermillion?
Yeah, unfortunately. It's one of go ahead.
That's a Genesis game, right?
It is, I think, the first Genesis RPG. So, when you're in town, it's kind of like a top-down view, which is fine. But once you go onto the map, it's in first person. And, you know, first person sort of 3D sprite scaling on Genesis doesn't work too well. Especially, you know, we're talking like early days. So it's, without a map, it's nigh impossible to, you know, find your way around. The only way to get a map is by finding new towns. And it's just a real pain in the ass. Not to mention the combat, it's real time. But to actually make a hit, you have to get right next to the enemy. And any collisions, even if they attacked you or not, it makes you take damage. So it's just a real hassle and not recommended for anyone.
Yeah, it's weird to have real time in something like that.
Yeah.
We also had Elevator Action. Did anyone pick that up? I haven't played it.
I heard it was pretty good.
I've heard people say it's pretty good. And then there's also Super Ghouls and Ghosts, which I can never remember. Is it connected to Ghosts and Goblins or not?
Yeah. I think it is. I'm pretty sure it is. I heard that on a Retronauts.
Connected in what sense?
Are they the same series or not?
Yeah, I mean, that's basically just the sequel. The first one was called Ghosts and Goblins, and then they called the sequel Ghouls and Ghosts, something like that. Yes. Oh, yeah.
Okay. It just gets confusing to me. And we recommended that for fans. And that game is pretty crushingly difficult, right?
Yeah.
All those games in that series are, really. Someone at Capcom gets their kicks off of making people want to throw their controller across the room.
Yeah.
Maybe you get some sort of kickback for every controller somebody buys.
Maybe. Yeah.
All right, this week's listener mail question comes from John, and he says, after listening to your previous episodes, I was wondering if Animal Crossing is coming to the Wii, and if so, do we have any idea when?
Yes.
That's his first question, and the answer is yes. Nintendo's already confirmed that. But doesn't have a solid release date, but it's coming out this year in Japan, right?
That's what they're saying, but I doubt it. Much.
I think it's just TBA.
No, they
all
might
around.
Not have said that.
Yeah. No, I think it was on that list of games that was shown or that Dengeki printed. But then I don't know if they actually listed a date for that.
Right. Maybe I just assumed it was a 2007.
I think it may have been at the end of the list. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that list was for 2007 as a whole.
The thing is, though, there were no hold on. I have the list up right now. It did list it, but it doesn't list a year. It lists a whole bunch of 2007 titles, and then it's at the bottom with Kirby, and in the release date column, it just says not yet finalized. So while it could be coming in 2007, probably it's not. Obviously, I think that's something they want to wait on until they have a really solid user base, just because online is going to play such a huge part.
Yeah. And it'll probably... When's the Animal Crossing movie out over there?
That, I think, is already out.
Yeah, it came out last December.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow. I don't keep up with my
And apparently
my
passed without notice. Yeah.
Yeah, at the end of that movie, it actually said, see you on the Wii, so we do know that it's coming.
Oh, yeah. No, it's official.
Yeah, and then John's other question is, when he gets a Wii, he was wondering what games we recommend other than Twilight Princess, which is pretty much a given. And I would recommend SSX. I think it's very good. What about you, Chris?
Recommendations for the Wii?
Yeah, for Wii games, other than Twilight Princess.
Oh, other than Twilight Princess. I'm still
right now.
Marble Mania? How's that sound to you? Yeah.
Yeah, you said Kororinpa? You played that. I'm looking forward to it. Good, right?
Yeah, I played that. That's good games.
Mm. Hopefully that'll be out by the time he gets his Wii.
I think it's out
maybe
in
Trauma
Center.
Trauma Center.
Just stop at Trauma Center. Just stop playing it as soon as it becomes like Space Invaders and there's little tiny aliens running around somebody's spleen and you're zapping them with a laser. Like, that's when I stop playing Trauma Center for the Wii. I'm like, I've played the DS version, it just gets stupid from here. And I totally lose interest.
Yeah, it's kind of ridiculous. Because
I'm not being a doctor anymore. I'm literally playing, like, just an arcade game, except for instead of being set in space, it's set in, like, somebody's pancreas.
That's a very good point, though. Trauma Center got completely ridiculous about, like, five missions in.
Yeah.
And I kept playing it.
It's like, doctor, this man is dying. Take this laser and start randomly zapping his innards.
It's a surgical laser, Chris. It's designed for that.
Yeah. It's like, doctor, you've horribly scarred him. Inject some mysterious green shit into him to bring his stats back up. It's like, what?
I would like to see, like, that engine is great, but I'd like to see a real doctor game on it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's like, I understand these people are not doctors, but, like, do they know anything? Are they human? Do they know how our bodies work?
They can make it like a Grey's Anatomy game, because that's pretty much just as melodramatic as Trauma Center's storyline was.
Nice.
If their dog gets sick, are they going to just start operating on it? Like, I don't know, dig him with a doctor. I know what I'm doing. Give me some Sunny Delight out of the fridge, and I'll just check it right here.
What do you guys think about WarioWare? Would you recommend that?
I haven't played it, so I can't say.
Like, I don't know. But I have it, and I've played it, but I'm not...
I like it.
Like, I really love WarioWare, but I'm not sure I would recommend the Wii version.
I just recently played it multiplayer for the first time, and that's a lot of fun. Especially in a small room with, like, five people and a lot of furniture and only one place to stand in front of the TV. So it's like, get in front of the TV, Chris, and you're just jumping over the couch and pushing people out of the way and trying to get in position. And, like, it's like, by the time you get to the TV, it's already giving you the form you have to get in. It gets pretty chaotic.
Fun. But you definitely have to know what you're doing with
WarioWare. It does.
I definitely wouldn't recommend Rayman.
No. What a disappointing game that was.
Yeah. It's a rental.
It's really funny.
It's funny as all hell, but
it's also got the absolute worst interface for picking minigames ever. Portraits, like, here's a picture and it remotely related to what the game is about, and you have to just sort of pick and choose and guess.
Right.
We just went through the single player together and passed the controller off because it was more fun not knowing what was coming up next.
That makes sense. I can see that.
Right. It was also just very obviously rushed and unfinished, you know, for launch. And you know, again, like it had a lot of good things going for it, and I had fun playing it, but again, I kind of stopped halfway through, like, okay, now you're just sort of recycling the mini games and making them harder. And it was already
the bunnies were
like,
better than the games. Pretty,
you know, you were coasting on the humor last time.
Mm-hmm.
But again, as a party game, you know, certainly
definitely.
It'd work a little better.
So that'll take us out of our listener mail segment. And after this short break, we will be back with the news. Mostly about the Game Developers Conference. Ironically, despite the fact that Nintendo couldn't say much, there was a decent amount of Nintendo news. First, which is not directly Nintendo news, is Sony's announced their PlayStation 3 Home service, which is a brief summary of it would be Second Life plus Xbox achievements.
Something like that, yeah. I mean, I do like that you can stream content via your Sony Bravia, which is going to be in every apartment, you know, kind of your little hub, and you know, people can come over and watch it. That's a pretty cool idea.
It's definitely got a lot of really, really cool features. I would really like, you know, I would really enjoy something like that, but it's not something that would make me buy a system. But I think it's really cool. But the news here that we want to talk about is that Nintendo says it's a little me too, you know, me too with two little eyes.
Yeah, I mean that's.
Yeah, they should have just kept their mouth closed there.
Yeah, I think that I think that's what everybody sort of initially thought when they heard about this. It's like, oh, you're going to create an avatar for yourself, and you're going to get like achievements in games. It's sort of like combining, you know, Xbox Live with Mii's. At the same time, you know, you watch the home demonstration, and it's like, okay, you know what? They're doing enough that's original.
Yeah.
And unique here that Xbox cannot do that, you know, and that we certainly cannot do that. I think they get a lot of credit for setting that up. And obviously they've been setting this up for a long time.
It's really ambitious. I mean, period.
It is really ambitious. Yep. I mean, and
totally.
It looks like it could really bring a lot of people in. I like the idea of just having this, you know, free sort of Second Life type thing on PS3.
Yeah, it's definitely something that I would be interested in if I had a PlayStation 3. I would sign up for that right away. More on...
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, totally.
Our next bit of GDC news is Miyamoto gave his keynote, but the Associated Press sort of got it wrong. If you read all these Associated Press articles, they say that Miyamoto's whole keynote was about how people shouldn't be making violent video games.
Yeah, it was really like... I saw it just after the I watched the keynote, and I'm like, were these people there, or are they making things up? What in the world? And it's getting picked up by, you know, everybody. It's getting picked up by picked up by Australia. I mean, it's all over the place.
Yeah,
and it's just ridiculous. And then at the end, it has this thing about, you know, all these new studies are linking violent video games to real-life violence and all kinds of other, you know, really stupid, unconfirmed crap.
You know, despite everything that the Associated Press said about his speech, I still think the funniest part of it about it is that they call Super Mario Galaxy an obstacle course kind of game.
I mean, it kind of is, though. That's what platforming
is. Well, you know, I mean, I do write mainstream news articles about video games, and there is, and I always kind of, I always found that really funny, too, the way that they phrase certain things. But eventually you kind of realize, like, the audience that you're writing to, who have no idea what video games are in a lot of cases, and you kind of have to find words that are in people's vocabularies that best, because platform game means nothing, means absolutely nothing to the average reader reading this. And so you have to come up with a very succinct description that gives at least some kind of, you know, idea to Joe Average guy about what exactly is going on. So, I mean, that I've done this before, you know, and it kind of feels weird as a gamer to write something, a phrase like obstacle course style game, but it really does convey, you know, that the information in a small sense. Yeah. So, I mean, that I'm not too worried about. So let's see. I'm looking at this piece right now. I mean, they do say, he does say in the article, designers have failed to deliver titles that bring joy to the widest possible spectrum of players, focusing too often on hardcore gamers. I mean, he does actually say this in the keynote. You know, they've got quotes from him about this. But you're right. I mean, I think that and I want to really tread lightly here because obviously, you know, we syndicate AP content. But I think that this person did miss the bigger picture. But then you sort of have to say, like, I wasn't at the keynote. Yeah. Actually, I was really sick that day, and I had to miss it. So ultimately, when the press writes something that's not entirely on message with what was going on, it's a question of did Nintendo convey their message accurately enough, you know?
Yeah, but I mean, this is something that really was like only kind of mentioned in passing. Like, he said that he was basically motivated by the feeling of joy on people's faces, imagining that and directing his games towards that. And he actually said that, you know, for you it might be different. You might want to evoke fear or violence or something, but that's not what motivates him. So for them to go out and say that he's telling the industry that they shouldn't do this is kind of misleading.
It's not
what he was saying at all.
Yeah.
He's saying if that's what you want to do, that's cool.
And it's actually kind of weird because I don't really... Did he mention at all... Were any of you guys there, by the way? Or have you...
No.
You've watched
I wasn't
the
there,
but
I
watched the video. I haven't actually watched the webcast, but I guess he didn't mention at all the idea of, like, violent games. Because really, you could take... You know, the comments that he's talking about, these apply to Grand Theft Auto. People are happy when they play Grand Theft Auto. You know, that's about, it's about tension and release. It's about making somebody work for something and then feeling a really good payoff. So I don't really think that yeah, you're right. I think she missed the point.
Yeah.
Which is too bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, his keynote was much more about, you know, what drives him to create a game and the wife-o-meter and things like that.
Yeah,
I thought the wife-o-meter was pretty interesting.
Right.
Our next bit of news is Keiji Inafune from Capcom, creator of
Don't
Dead Rising
Remind
and Lost
Me.
Planet. He said that the engines for those games won't run on the Wii, so he's going to be utilizing the Resident Evil 4 engine for his unannounced Wii game, which I'm all for because that game. Was
I mean,
pretty.
Obviously, like. The Resident Evil 4 engine is going to run on the Wii.
Got a good
engine. As we all know, the Wii is a piece of shit, and it's two GameCubes duct taped together. Okay.
That's actually our next piece of news.
So, yeah. but obviously, that was going to be. Have you guys heard my horrible, horrible Keiji Inafune story? Let me tell you.
No.
So, I don't know if you.
I don't believe so.
I've mentioned this previously, but on Thursday, I was violently ill and could not go to GDC. On Thursday, besides all the other stuff that I was supposed to do, I was supposed to actually do this Keiji Inafune panel. I was supposed to be up on stage interviewing him and asking him all these questions and everything. And unfortunately, so I had to call up Capcom that morning and say I'm throwing up all over the place and don't want any of it to land on Mr. Inafune, so I'm not going to come to GDC. So please make other arrangements. And so I was supposed to actually do this panel. And so it's nice to hear that it went well, and that good information came out of it, but I'm, sort of silently shaking my fists at the heavens for not getting to participate in it. But yeah, very, you know, I'm looking forward to whatever he makes on the Wii.
Yeah, I'm sure it'll certainly be very, very good. Well, I guess Dead Rising I thought was lots of fun. Lost Planet, not so much. So, moving on to our next piece of news, Chris Hecker of Maxis at the Game Developers Rant panel at the Game Developers Conference called the Wii a piece of shit and that it was, quote, two GameCubes duct taped together. And then instantly, Will Wright slapped him on the back of the head and made him apologize.
Yeah, right. I mean, that was the funny sort of arc that this whole thing took, that he says this, and it just makes the internet explode completely, and the next thing you know, he's just taking it all back. I think the Wii is great.
Yeah.
It's not two GameCubes duct taped together. It's at least three or four. I love it. You know? Oh, man. Do you guys have any feelings on it?
Yeah. Probably got a call from his boss like, hey, you want to keep working here? you probably want to apologize. But
it is kind of related to the last thing. I mean, from a developer standpoint, trying to make multi-platform games, now you're kind of stuck with this bottleneck that you've
got to overcome. You're making somehow these games with amazing visuals for the Xbox and the PlayStation, and then you have to sort of make an entirely different game for the Wii, and I'm sure that has a lot of developers, like, you know, really pissed off.
Yeah, these are clearly very real frustrations coming out. You know, as we know, I mean, he works for Maxis, and of course, I don't think that's a secret that they're doing Spore on the DS and the Wii. I don't think it's a secret that Will Wright is in love with Nintendo.
Are they doing it on the
marry
Wii?
Them. Sorry?
Mm-hmm. I thought, I didn't know they announced Spore for Wii. I thought it was DS.
I believe I heard they were making a Wii version. I don't know. I mean, okay. I think if they're making it for the DS, I'm sure they can get out a version on the Wii.
Yeah.
Yeah, Will Wright loves the Nintendo.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, they're making My Sims a very special, you know, a totally unique Sims for the Wii. SimCity on the
Japanified.
DS. Yeah. I mean, you know, so obviously, and the thing is, I mean, I don't want to give the impression because I don't want to give the impression that I know what happened behind the scenes. I do not at all. I don't know if Hecker just had a change of heart or if there was pressure from his bosses. I'm not suggesting that there was. But to put this in context, which I think is really valuable, Electronic Arts had chosen this GDC to be the place where they announced and threw a big party to celebrate the fact that they were going full bore into Wii development, and they were leading the next wave on the Wii, that they were that they love the Wii, that they're very excited about the Wii. And that they had this big party in which they showed off a bunch of Wii games, talked a whole bunch about the future, and really this was because they had missed the boat at Wii launch, you know, only having one game or two games, you know, before the end of the year. And now they really needed to come out very strongly and say, because the Wii is outselling everything, you know, and they had to be like, you know, yes, we're going to be on this platform. Yes, we love it. Here's all our games coming out in the spring and very big support in 2007, you know, rally behind EA on the Wii, and day one of GDC, one of their top designers comes out and calls it a piece of shit. You know? So I'm giving you that's the context in which that remark took place. You can fill in all of the details on your own of what you think happened between that and the apology. I wouldn't want to be Chris Hecker, but again, I know zero about, you know, what actually took place.
And it's really nice to see EA, you know, the biggest publisher out there, putting all this money and time into Wii development and making actual, you know, really quality games like SSX Blur.
Yeah.
They're not just doing crap ports.
Mm-hmm. They have to. I mean, every month that they don't have Wii games out there is like a compounded loss of revenue because they anticipated PlayStation 3 to sell a lot more than it did, that Xbox mm-hmm. 360 would sell a lot more than it did, and that Wii would sell a lot less than it did. And so when you're doing the math, when you're looking at the balance sheets, when you're not there with all those titles for the Wii, you're just missing out on all this money mm-hmm. month on month on month. And so they had to. And if you look at what they did.
So there's tons of money for EA to grab.
Yeah, I mean, but if you look at what EA did, I mean, they had to, like, furiously reorganize. They bought that Salt Lake studio. They changed it into EA Salt Lake, and now it just makes games for the Wii, you know, on a constant basis. Mm-hmm. I mean, they had not planned for it, and the solution had to be they had to throw a lot of money at it really, really fast, buy a studio, and make them just start churning out Wii games, because that's the only way that they were going to be able to be in that space as fast as they possibly could.
Yeah, and you know, we're seeing a lot of publishers doing that now. Disney has done the same thing.
Yeah, I don't think that they just didn't realize. They realized way too late. Everybody, pretty much except for Ubisoft, who was on the ball right from the beginning, and seriously reaped the benefits this Christmas. They said that something with sales in, you know, January were up 75% or something like, you know, something ridiculous just based on Wii sales. Don't quote me on that number. Look it up for yourselves.
Yeah.
Hopefully they'll start making some quality games and make even more money.
Nah. Doubt it.
Oh, you know. They're working.
Yeah, I'm
on
sure.
It.
You know, they're just putting out. I'm sure they have some. I'm really sure they have some huge Wii games in development. But in the meantime, we're getting more Prince of Persia's and Splinter Cell ports. But
yeah. Prince of Persia could be good. You don't know.
I can play it on the GameCube. It's the same game. So
yeah. I mean, the GameCube game was
it's a good game. I'm not gonna. Yeah, Prince of Persia: Two Thrones was definitely a good game, but I would rather buy it for $30 on GameCube than $50 on Wii.
Yeah, that's fair.
They're definitely doing a lot of rehashing, but I'm sure we'll see some bigger IPs coming out from them, or some newer IPs.
Yeah, no, I think they are... well, that's the thing. It's like, they've put out all these games, they've learned the system, you know, they're ahead of the curve now. So now they can start working on stuff that's really, truly great. You know, I think probably the next Rayman game is going to be the one that really nails it, you know? If they take a lot of time on Red Steel 2, you know, having sort of worked out what works and what doesn't,
yeah,
you know, that has good potential.
Can be fantastic.
As well. Yeah. Yeah, it's a lot of Red Steel was a lot of really, really interesting concepts, just sort of hampered by a lot of things that just didn't work out.
And our last bit of news for the week is that Disney's announced that they're doing a High School Musical game. And if you haven't heard about a High School Musical, you're probably not 13 years old, because it's essentially the biggest thing in the tween market right now. It completely dominates.
You said tween.
Hey, it's true. I have a marketing degree. I'm allowed to use that word. High School Musical was this made for TV movie that Disney put out on their own channel that just absolutely exploded, and it's got already has I think a Game Boy game out already. Maybe it's had at least 3 issues of the original DVD. They're working on a sequel. They're doing like a live show for their theme parks, and they're basically marketing the hell out of it because all these kids seem to love it. And now they're doing video games, and they've announced that they're doing video games for the DS and the Wii, but the Wii version is going to use a microphone, which is sort of it's probably not confirmation that there's an official first party microphone coming, but it's definitely confirmation that somebody's making a microphone attachment for this thing.
Well, there's one thing that really strikes me as being really hilarious about this. Didn't Disney, like, a couple of years ago say that they're not putting, like, musical-style stuff in their movies anymore because the kids don't like it?
And then, then they go and make this thing, and it turns out that everyone loves it.
Right.
But, you know. Oh. It's cool to see the microphone. I'm just not that excited for the game.
Well, yeah.
But I am not a tween, as Mike says, so
I think, yeah,
that's
I mean,
probably why.
I think a karaoke game is, like, a no-brainer for the Wii, it seems like to me. Or if they could get some...
Right. Now, are you going to get more points for swaying side to side and using that accelerometer
maybe,
and motion sensor?
I just hope that... My biggest hope for this Wii microphone is that, like, it's just the head of the microphone, and it snaps onto the bottom of your remote, and you just flip it upside down, and the remote becomes the handle. I would hate for it to, like, connect with a wire like the Nunchuck does, and then have to hold a remote and a microphone. That just seems ridiculous to me.
Is Nintendo doing this, or is this...
No one knows, so...
Oh, okay.
Disney.
All it is they've said that it's going to use a microphone. They haven't said who's making the microphone or, you know, anything like that.
I see.
But hopefully it'll be some sort of snap-on thing, because it just makes sense to me that way for the remote to just turn into a microphone.
Yeah.
Or a headset.
Yeah, or a headset. I guess I could see a headset also.
A USB headset would work.
Well, not a USB, like one that would plug into the bottom of your remote.
Yeah.
So I guess still be wireless.
I'd rather have it be USB,
but then you have to have a huge cable coming out of your Wii. Who knows? I'm sure the DS version will use the DS's headset jack. But yeah, and that'll bring us to the end of our news segment. When we get back, we'll go through our general thoughts on GDC.
Welcome back to Radio Free Nintendo. We'll move on to our feature topic for the week, is the Game Developers Conference and everyone's just thoughts on the show. We sort of talked a lot about that during the news, but I'd like to get more thoughts on PlayStation Home from everyone in particular.
I guess I'll start out. Like I said before, you know, it's a really impressive idea. It's not I'm gonna shell out $600 kind of idea, but it's one of those things that if you were to compound it with a really great game and, you know, maybe some real pushing in the online, you know, point of view, then it could definitely be something that would have convinced me to buy a PS3, you know. It's a really cool service, I think.
Yeah, and my issues with it are I guess they're issues, but they're not issues with, like, the way it's designed. First of all, it seems like it's definitely a giant marketing machine, Sony.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone has a Bravia TV, and when they go to the theater, you can watch the trailer for Spider-Man 3 and you know, it's the whole thing is all, and they, I believe during the keynote they mentioned something about like the banner ads in the PlayStation world being right. actual, you know, like physical banners and
well,
like, oh, you know, there's going to be ads everywhere.
That's what helps keep it free. That's what keeps yeah. it free, you know? That's why.
It's something, you know, it's acceptable, but it's definitely, that's not so much what it is. It's just that they also mentioned the phrase premium content a whole lot during the keynote. Like, if you want a regular couch, you can get a regular couch, but if you want a cool couch, you're going to have to pay for it. Kind of thing. Yeah. It seemed like that's what it was going to be to me. Like, that's pretty much how Second Life works, except instead of everyone paying Second Life, they just pay each other. It's got its own, like, economy.
Yeah, I'm not going to pay for a couch.
But some people might. I mean, it works in Second Life. American Apparel sells t-shirts inside Second Life, and people buy them.
What can I say? There were a lot of dumb kids in the
Yeah,
apartment.
You know, I had talked to Phil Harrison about this, and he was really non-committal on the idea of people making their own
yeah.
shirts and selling them. So, I mean, what Sony has said so far seems to just indicate, and again, this is not to say that they will never do anything other than this, but the indication that I'm getting is that Sony will make the shirts yeah. and then sell you the shirts, and then they keep the money.
Yeah, obviously, and some so will be earned through games, but, you know.
Some will be earned through games, you know, contest prizes, whatever. But, I mean, in terms of actual cash transactions going down, it seems like it's pretty much just you give your money to Sony.
Yeah.
Because, again, it does open up... it's not so much that they're greedy. It's that doing it otherwise does kind of open up a legal can of worms that I'm not really sure they want to tackle at this point. It's Linden Labs' only job. Second Life's reason for existence is to create this virtual economy, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's why Linden Labs is running.
Right.
I don't know if it's something that Sony wants to get into, especially considering that, you know, it's the IRS is starting to take a lot of sidelong glances at Second Life, you know what I mean, and what's going on there. So they might, I'm not really sure, but maybe they'll let people make their own stuff and trade it. But as far as, like, actually letting people run a business from the PlayStation 3... We'll certainly see.
Probably a long shot for that to happen. But then my other main thing with it is that one of the things that makes Xbox Live such a good platform is that it's locked down, and like every game on the 360 has to have, you know, X number of achievements that add up to a certain number of points, and they have to, all the games have to be online. I mean, they at least have to be like live aware. Like, they need to have leaderboards or something. They don't necessarily need to have online play. But all the games, like, are perfectly integrated into the system, and every game has achievements. And I want to know if Sony is going to have some sort of mandate. Like, your game absolutely has to have these entitlements, or it won't be on PlayStation 3. Because something tells me that they're not going to do that, and we're only going to see these trophies coming from first-party games.
Well, it's funny that you mentioned that, because I was listening to one of yours early in the week when they had their kind of daily GDC thing. And they were talking about this, and they said something about how third parties would have their specific, like, halls or rooms or something where you get to see, like, that, like, company-specific content. Like, say, Electronic Arts has their apartment or room or hall or whatever, and, you know, that's where you go to download a new Tiger Woods PGA Golf demo or something like that. So I do think that they will have third-party content. I think that it's definitely going to be regulated by Sony. I don't think you're going to be able to just pop it on there. But
no,
I think
there's
a lot of stuff.
Obviously, it'll be regulated.
Yeah. That's a really
interesting. The question is, will it be mandated?
Yeah, that's a really interesting thing to. It might be mandated, but I think I don't think it's something that you really have to mandate. I mean, you know, it's not mandated that people breathe in and out, but we do it anyway. Like, I think there's a lot of advantages to having achievements and trophies and things like that.
But is there
going to
be?
And so, I mean, I think that third parties, as soon as they get the ability, will all want to do it. Because you want to have your... Because, of course, you want to have your trophies for your game displayed in somebody's home when, you know, their friends come over. What game is that?
But on the Xbox, they're regulated.
And it's so easy. It's just so easy. Like, somebody could do that in a day, you know? They could just hire one college student to do that in
But what's preventing, you know, EA from putting 100 trophies in their game and Ubisoft putting 1,000 trophies in their game, you know? There's no...
I think that every game can only have, like, I guess nothing, except for the fact that, you know, you can choose to display the trophies.
See, on the 360, it's like regulated.
So,
like,
I mean,
your game has to have this number of it has to add up, your achievements have to add up to this gamer score. Yeah.
It has to add up to 1,000.
If Sony doesn't do something like that, it's just going to spiral out of control. The first game will have like 1,000 points, and then some other developer will come out with a game that gives you 1,000,000 points, and then someone will give you 1,000,000,000 points, and it'll just keep going up and up and up.
Oh, I see. No, I don't think there are no points. I don't think there's a gamer score. I think it's just simply things that you did in the game, and then you get graphical trophies to represent those. And you could just get one trophy.
Right.
You know, they don't have to give you a trophy for every single achievement. Because actually, in Home, if you watch the demo, there's like one trophy for Loco Roco. And then it just sort of cycles these things underneath it. These little, you know, text messages that say what you did in Loco Roco.
And it could also be something...
Yeah, yeah.
It could also be something like, you get a trophy for getting the game, but then other stuff you get is like accessories for your apartment. Like, maybe you play Tekken or something, and now you have a pair of like boxing gloves or something in your apartment, or you get
or even accessories for your trophy.
Maybe, yeah, maybe get ribbons.
Or hang a pair of boxing gloves off your trophy. Maybe. Tekken, maybe. Or something like that.
One of the things I thought was funny is that Sony kind of played into the whole comparison to Miis by saying that, you know, oh, people will prefer to have something that looks more realistic. And to me, I think it's just going to make it harder for people to come up with something. They'll just create a fictional character that looks nothing like them.
Yeah,
with Miis, everyone sort of tries to make something that looks like a caricature of themselves. But with this thing, people are just going to be making, oh, that guy looks cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think it's interesting. They said that there's not going to be any children in the PlayStation Home world, which is probably a really good thing from a legal standpoint.
Yeah, you don't want your you don't want someone coming into your apartment while you're watching porn and it's a little kid.
That would be terrible. Oh my god, because if you can stream content, what's to prevent you from putting like a hardcore porno up on your Bravia in your PlayStation apartment and then some other player walking in and it's actually like some 12-year-old kid?
Well, I think
that's going to be huge when that happens.
I think that only people who are on like your buddy list or people that you've invited can come over, so I don't think that's an issue. But I mean, you can definitely invite little kids over.
It'd be your fault.
Yeah.
It'd be no, because then if you invited a little kid to be your friend, oh
that's
my god, that's
fault.
Just like, oh, that's the worst idea ever. There's gonna be so many terrible like Tonight at 10 stories about that.
Yeah, that's trouble.
Are children hanging out with pedophiles on their PlayStations?
What I'm not so much worried about the porno. I'm worried about copyrighted content. Like, what's to prevent you from having like, you know, Mike's Theater, where you just play movies all the time, and then people can pop in and watch a movie?
Well, they've already said that you won't be able to stream Blu-ray videos. You'll be able to launch Blu-ray video from the PlayStation Home, but it'll jump
DVDs?
You out of home. Anything like that, I think, will jump you out of home. It'll just be like MPEG files that you have on your hard drive that you can.
Okay, well, what's to prevent you from just converting it over?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, seriously, like it's they're really going to have to be careful about how they regulate that.
But well, I think the fact that it's streaming gives it some copyright loophole. Like with internet radio, like Live 365, you can stream music all day and night, and because it's being streamed, it's legal or something. Mm-hmm. There's some sort of copyright loophole around it because it's streaming.
I don't know. We'll have to wait and see on that one.
Yeah. And then the other big, I hate to keep talking about Sony, but Little Big Planet looked completely like the most awesome game ever to me.
Yeah.
Well, it's not really a game. It's a design your game kind of game.
Is it? I thought it had like predefined levels and everything.
Well, it does, but then the whole thing is about making your own levels,
right.
And then it becomes like a YouTube thing. You make your own levels, and then people comment, and then it rises up the ranks.
God, that's freaking brilliant.
And don't get me wrong, that's cool as hell. Like, that's awesome for me. I'm just hoping that it's more about playing levels than making levels. That's what I'm thinking here. Like, I it's cool to design your own level, but how is it really going to play? Is it going to play like a real game, or is it going to play like a school project? That's what I'm wondering here.
Well, I mean, did you see the video of it being played?
Yeah, but here's the thing. That's, you know, a Sony-made level.
Well, yeah, you know? But I'm sure, I mean, there'll be people off. I'm sure there will be a set of levels that come with the game, and I'm sure Sony will be providing more levels, you know, to keep the game growing. It just looked like, I don't even care about making levels. That game just looked like an absolute blast to play.
Yeah. Well, what's interesting, too, is they said that other people can actually be playing on the level while you're designing it and working out the issues.
Oh, so like live debug.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's cool.
And Microsoft didn't really have, I mean, they didn't have like a huge keynote or anything, but Peter Molyneux was there talking about his pet dog.
Yeah, didn't he dedicate his speech or something to a dog?
Well, apparently, like, I'm not sure if I'm getting this completely right, but apparently in Fable 2, the dog is the user interface or something? Is that what he said?
Yeah.
It's not so much that the dog is the user interface, but they've removed like the mini map and everything like that, and the dog kind of now shows you where to go. It's just sort of trying to streamline the whole process.
That's an interesting idea. Like, I know EA does that with SSX. You can go down the whole mountain and you don't have to see a menu. You can just snowboard your way from one track to the next, and that's like a really cool idea to me. That and this dog thing, I mean, he's definitely. I learned to take everything Peter Molyneux says with a grain of salt, because there were probably about 5 million features that were supposed to be in Fable that didn't quite make the cut.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you know, the dog is pretty much central to the whole thing. So, that'll definitely be in there.
Yeah. And you can also get pregnant?
I heard something about that. I didn't
apparently
get the details.
You can get pregnant in Fable 2?
Yes. Yes. Yes, you
pretty
can.
Pretty ambitious.
You'll be adventuring while you're pregnant. I don't know what that, you know, will entail. Like, it like go out and find some pickles and wait for the ice cream. You know. Like,
yeah, that'd definitely be. I'm interested in that. And then Nintendo, it didn't have much except that they had Super Paper Mario playable.
Yes, and that was awesome. Played through the whole thing.
Did you play it, Chris?
The whole thing. I played every single demo level, all like three of them.
Can you tell us about it?
Yes, I can. it was pretty awesome. I mean, it was pretty much just a very, you know, small taste of it. It is broken up into levels. You start at the beginning of a level. You all kinds of, like, action sequences while you're talking to people and solving puzzles. Then you get to the end of the level, and there's a box, you know, with a power-up, you know, like with a star in it, like at the end of the Super Mario Brothers 3 levels, and you hit that to end the level, and you move on. So that was really interesting. It has that sort of leveling. Or that sort of structure. Very, very funny, of course. Bizarre, just the characters are just really, really weird. Princess Peach got to play as her. When you get that power-up that turns you gigantic, she turns into gigantic Super Mario 1 Princess Peach. That ugly, ugly sprite.
Ugly one, yeah.
With her one eye and her mouth kind of frozen open into a grimace, and her one arm sticking out, and she just, I mean, if I was an enemy, I'd run the hell out of the way if I saw that thing coming after me. Like, oh, yeah, I'd just commit suicide, swallow my Koopa cyanide pill, and be done with it. And actually, there's this really hilarious scene where she turns into crazy, you know, giant Pixel Peach, and a Koopa Troopa sees her and freaks out and starts running the other way, and finds one of those power-ups, and he grabs it, and he turns into a giant Super Mario 1 Koopa Troopa, and then he starts rampaging towards you, and then you run away, and then you find one, and you turn into... And these transformation sequences are ridiculously long, because they draw in all the pixels. So it's just this gigantic, like, slow-motion car crash of a comedy sequence. And then Princess Peach becomes Super Princess Peach, and then she starts running, and you run her back towards the Koopa. And, like, and these two giant screen-filling things collide, and he just dies, and it's like 100 points. And it's great. It's very, very funny. It's just constant, very fast-paced, humorous, all kinds of weird stuff. And just the fact that you can... The switching between 2D and 3D is not, I mean, it's definitely not just a cheap little gimmick. Like, it's going to, a lot of things, people are going to miss a lot of things on first playthroughs just because you have to keep switching or else you're not going to see everything that's going on. And it's very easy to just hide stuff that you can't see in the alternate, you know, dimensions. Yeah, so
now,
it's...
How is that new pointer function that they showed off?
That's basically...
Did you use that?
That is used essentially as a, if you're playing an adventure game, that's like the look function. You point the pointer at the screen, the action stops when you do that, and you can just point it at things and click on them to get your little fairy friend, whatever, Navi, or whatever the hell the thing is called, to describe what they see. It's basically Navi, but I forgot the actual name, to describe everything. And then sometimes there's hidden stuff on the screen, and you put the pointer on it, and you click on it, and it's like, oh, it's a hidden door. So that's actually pretty cool, and it works really well because it just because it stops everything when you put it at the screen.
Now,
so you're
Chris,
not worried about juggling it back and forth.
Do you play it? Like you play it like an NES pad?
Yep, you play it NES pad style.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Now, Chris, as someone who hated the first two Paper Mario games, Will I like this game?
Well, I don't know. Your taste is suspect right away. So
yeah, I know. Seriously. First of all, what's your problem? And second of all, this is not. I mean, it's not an RPG. It's very much an action game. It is a light action game. It is not like at least the first few levels were. I wouldn't call them especially difficult. It's sort of an action RPG kind of thing with, you know, RPG elements strewn in, but it's more of a. It very much is like half Mario side scroller, half RPG. And if it does have any issues, it might be that it's sort of riding that line without doing either one, especially it's at least in the first few levels with anything resembling Gusto. But what I've heard from people who have finished the whole thing is that it's excellent. So,
all
right. What else have you played at GDC?
Kicked the booth babe's ass at Big Brain Academy. She went down hard, and I mean, it wasn't even funny. Like, I hadn't even played the game before, and she had been playing it all day, and I just stomped her. So that was fun.
How does that work?
Because I'm really
smart.
Are you
like doing two different things, or two people doing two different
things? Yeah, it's no. It's a random set of puzzles that gets chosen for both of you at the beginning. You both get the same set of puzzles.
Right.
And then, you know, she's on the left side of the screen, I'm on the right side of the screen, we're just pointing at our sides, and we're solving these puzzles as fast as we can, and whoever gets through first wins.
Okay.
But the thing is that, like, it's not just, like, Brain Age style, you know, do a bunch of math problems and stuff. There are, like, actual logic puzzles and things like that, too. So, like, you get a bunch of Tetris blocks, and you have to destroy one so that the rest of them fall down and make a certain shape.
Ooh, that sounds cool.
And so you have to pick out which one to click on and blow it up. And so, yeah, I mean, it's really cool.
Sounds like something I would definitely be interested in.
Totally, yeah, it was fun, and I played the multiplayer mode in Phantom Hourglass.
Is it the same as they had at E3?
No, it's not totally different.
Okay.
No. Well, maybe it is. I don't know. What was it like at E3?
One person controlled some demons, and then one person controlled Link, and Link had to collect pieces of Triforce.
Oh, okay, so it's identical to the E3 version. I didn't know they were even showing multiplayer at E3.
Yeah, that's
all
I got.
That big wall of DS games.
Oh, okay, huh. Yeah, that's what they were showing. It was really fun, though. It was, you know, I was just running Link around getting Triforces, and then you switch back and forth. Because,
right.
It's three rounds, and each person gets to turn at Link three times. But then controlling the demons is done by drawing paths with them with
right.
a stylus. Is that how it was done at E3? Yeah. So, yeah, okay, identical.
Probably
to E3.
The same demo.
Yeah, but Game Informer actually did an interview with Aonuma and found out that it's going to be Wi-Fi.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's exciting. It's nice to see Nintendo embracing some more online. Because, I mean, they do it with the DS, but it's really, really sparse.
It's sporadic.
Yeah.
It is. It's like, they're like, we're going gung-ho with online, blah, blah, blah. And then they just totally don't release any online games.
Yeah, like,
well,
like
what's
started
funny,
and
though,
released
is Japan.
Like five games. And
Japan is getting a lot of online stuff right now. Like, I was just working on some, updating some Japanese profiles. It seemed like every other one I was updating had some kind of Wi-Fi play.
Yep. Layton is actually online. Professor Layton has downloadable puzzles.
Oh, yeah? Yeah, and see, Lunar Nights was online in Japan, but it's not here.
Like,
really?
Online co-op?
I don't know exactly what they have. It looks like they have like some kind of thing where you get gifts from there, like special items every day. That's the only thing I could see. I don't know if there's something more to it.
Yeah. I'm just excited that they're bringing Panel de Pawn out again. They're bringing Puzzle League out again. And
they need to bring Picross over here.
Yeah, they're bringing Picross over here. But Panel de Pawn's going to have four-player, I believe I read it has four-player Wi-Fi with real-time voice chat.
Okay.
And that's way exciting to me because I'm like huge puzzle league.
Whatever. You know, getting back to Phantom Hourglass, I saw the trailer and it is awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, the new trailer is great.
It really does look really, and it really emulates the GameCube Wind Waker style very well. The only thing is that I guess, you know, when you're going to DS, it's a huge downgrade in power, but the Link's face just looks, something about it just looks weird. It looks like, obviously it's got less polygons, but something about it just looks kind of like the dismembered head from Dr. Kawashima's Brain Age. Like, it's something about his head just looks exactly the same. I don't know. It just kind of threw me off a little. But other than that, it looked great, so I'm definitely looking forward to it. Yeah.
So, do you guys have any other GDC topics you want to touch on?
Oh, I definitely do. I wouldn't be a Radio Free Nintendo if I didn't mention Killer 7. So I'm gonna go.
Oh right. No More Heroes.
Goichi Suda had a keynote and where he showed off a new trailer for No More Heroes, And it's got a similar style to Killer7. It's a little bit more, what's the word? It's not as finely tuned yet as Killer7 was, so it's a little more blocky, a little more rough. But it still looks really, really good. A lot more violent than Killer7. I know that's weird, but the thing about Killer7 is, okay,
I didn't think it looked more violent than Killer7.
Well, Killer7 is subtly violent. Like, it's dark and it's moody and it is very gory, but it's not like, you're not walking around and, like, you're shooting someone and they explode, but it's very stylized explode. In this one, you're literally cutting people in half and blood, like, just sprays in every direction, Kill Bill style. And so it's definitely, I think, a little bit more gore than Killer7 was, just from what I've seen so far.
Part of it, part of that trailer looked like Grand Theft Auto, where he's riding around on the motorcycle.
Yeah. It looked cool.
And then he goes in to fight that guy. Oh, what's his
Destroy
name?
Man. His Destroy Man.
Destroy Man. Destroy Man. And all he does is shout things like, Destroy Beam!
Destroy Cannon!
Destroy...
Oh,
yeah.
So good. I cannot wait.
I don't know if the game will be any good at all. I would wager that in the end it'll probably be completely mediocre, but it looks...
Well, you know, Mike, that's where you're wrong.
And hilarious.
That's where you're wrong, because if we've learned anything from Killer7, it's that no one knows Goichi Suda's brilliance, except for me. So I will appreciate it.
Well, we have to talk about Super Mario Galaxy, too, before we go.
Oh, right. Of course.
So, I don't really care about Super Mario Galaxy.
Well, the new trailer doesn't really show a whole lot of anything we haven't... Like, it shows a whole lot of areas that we haven't seen before, but gameplay-wise, it doesn't show much of anything new.
Yeah.
Right.
Though it did look like to me in that trailer they had toned back the amount of pointing at the screen you're doing.
Yeah, seemed like it. Yeah, the thing about Super Mario Galaxy is that every time I see it and every time people talk about it, they're like, this is the most visually stunning Wii game I've ever seen. And that bothers me because there are so many jaggies. Like, it's so...
I think it looks really, really smooth.
I don't know what I'm saying, but every time I see that game, there are so many jaggies on screen, it really bothers me. I don't know. But yeah, but there are definitely a lot of polys stuck in there. It's very definitely, you know, texture-wise, it's very surprising for a Wii game because the textures are so good. But aside from the jaggies, it looks good. Gets the thumbs up in the visuals department.
What looked most interesting to me is at one point he's flying around and there's this giant area that looks like a giant pill.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like it's got like six different environments inside of it, and it just like it looks like you'll just be winding your way through this. It almost looks like a three-dimensional, you know, maze.
Yeah.
And then he blasts out the top of it, and it just looks really, really, really amazing. Like, nothing I've ever seen before.
My one worry about the game is that I can see myself getting dizzy playing it, because he's jumping around so much. It's just...
You know, I mean, I didn't feel that way at all when I was actually playing it, so...
Yeah, you have played it, so you're the authority on this one, but it just looks a little jumpy.
There's plenty of gravity.
Well, it's interesting, too, to see, I mean, there was that one area with the thwomps that, you know, does have, like, a normal daylight sky. So I'm still interested in seeing
And there was another lava area, too.
Yeah.
And that definitely just looked like, it didn't look like he was on a planet there, or, like, one of those tiny little meteoroids. It looked like a full, you know, a full-on level. So maybe it'll sort of be like Mario traverses, like, instead of Princess Peach's castle, we'll be given this galaxy of meteoroids that Mario traverses, but then instead of jumping into the paintings, he lands on larger planets that contain full levels.
Sorry, Mario, our princess is in another galaxy.
Yeah, something like that. That'd be awesome if someone said that.
I hope that's what happens. Yeah. That'd be great. Yeah.
Well, I guess if no one has any other topics, that'll bring us to the end of this week's Radio Free Nintendo.
I think it does.
All right. Well, I've been
here.
Well, go ahead.
Okay. My topic is that we're redesigning the Wired.com site this week. I think. Just go to Wired.com and keep pressing F5 until it looks different. And stay on Game Life. Once I get over this illness, where I'm going to be posting a bunch of stuff from Video Games Live, including. That video of Gameju singing to Miyamoto, which I think is already up there. So yeah.
All right, well, that'll bring us
exciting
to the end of yet another edition of Radio Free Nintendo. For my compatriots Carl Castaneda, Dan Bloodworth, and Chris Kohler, I've been your host, Mike Splens. Once again, if you have any questions, comments, listener mail, etc., send them to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com, and we will see you again next week.
Bye bye bye, everybody.